Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No! Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Good morning and welcome to Money Life. It's Money Life for May the 19th. Thanks for joining me. We are going to make it worth your while. We have a great show for you today. So it's Thursday, and we don't have all of our regulars in their regular order because Bob Powell is not here today. He gets this week off. It's because we adjusted the schedule with me taking the one day off, and we put the buy and sell of the week together on Wednesday. Normally, you, of course, have the buy of the week on Tuesday. That meant that we moved Collective Wisdom to today's show. So today, the regulars who are here, Tom Lydon from ETF Trends for the ETF of the week, and Matthias Kuhlme and Matt Harris, continuing a discussion they had last week. Last week, they were talking about inflation. And if you forgot the discussion, it basically boiled down to, hey, you know those real numbers that they give for inflation where they use the CPI and it says there is none? Well, we're using different measures. And where CPI says there's virtually no inflation, our numbers say inflation could be as high as 9%. Yeah. Well, if inflation could be as high as 9%, you better be investing towards it, I think. And they are. But they'll tell you what they're investing in. That's what we're going to talk about today in Collective Wisdom. Now, between those two, we've got James Dearborn, Senior Portfolio Manager and Head of Municipal Investments for Columbia Threadneedle. And we will be talking muni bonds with him. We'll also be asking the question that I have not asked any guests since the statement was made. Donald Trump, the presumptive candidate for president for the Republican Party, made some comments a week ago. I mentioned them briefly on the show, where he was talking about the prospect, at least, of treating the national debt akin to the way he treats debt that he has had for his own company, meaning he was basically saying you could default. Now, part of it was he was saying, look at how much you'd, you know, the only people who would really be hurt by default were, you know, China and investors overseas, which is not true. I mean, the biggest holders, you could say that China is the biggest holder, I suppose, or whatever their stat they're using. But the truth is the vast majority of debt is actually domestic mutual funds. That's what's in your 401k. That's what's in your pension fund. And you can't have a default. It cannot happen. It would be a nightmare. It would forever change the world in some bad ways, and financially it would be just a horror show. So do I think that it's going to happen? No, I do not. But I've been waiting to talk to a bond manager to go, what do you think this one means, and what does it do for the bond market to at least even have it on the table? So we'll ask that, among other things. Of course, we're going to ask what James thinks of the muni market and more as we have our big interview today. Then, of course, it's Collective Wisdom, after which it's the Money Life Market Call. Our guest today, David Swank, he is co-manager of the Hood River Small Cap Growth Fund. His co-manager, Brian Smolik, was on the show about 4 months ago, making his debut. Today, David Swank makes his debut. So a new guy from a small fund in for the market call. That's our lineup. It should be a good show. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show every weekday. You can find my work online at MarketWatch.com, or you can find me chatting here every day. Money Life is independent personal finance talk. It is dedicated to looking smartly at a wide range of approaches and opinions on investing. This is not just about, hey, I like this, or I think you should do that. This is about taking a broad range of approaches and opinions on investing and making sure you hear from all sides. Because disagreement makes a market, and you are in the middle of that disagreement. You have to decide who you believe in, who you want to trust, who maybe is overstating the case and you want to avoid. Because that's where you're going to make your money, in the middle of that disagreement. I'd love for you to get involved, or more involved, in the show. Now, if you are on Twitter.
Hello, Twitterers.
Well, you can follow us at Money Life Show. If you've been following us, I'm sorry. I've been a little inactive on the Twitter. Try to get caught up and make sure that we're staying current going forward. I'm at MKTW Jaffe. That's tweeting about my columns, sometimes some other stuff as well. Write us, chuck@moneylifeshow.com. I'd love to hear from you with your questions, your comments, your picks for Hold It or Fold It, and much more. And please, if you want to help us, tell your friends about us. So that's it. It's Money Life for May the 19th. Thanks again for joining me. Our lineup: Tom Lydon to James Dearborn to Collective Wisdom, meaning Matthias Kuhlme and Matt Harris from Hightower, and then the Money Life Market Call with David Swank from Hood River Small Cap Growth and Hood River Capital. We'll start things off with Tom Lydon and his pick for ETF of the Week when Money Life really picks up speed right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Well, I don't favor talking to vermin, but I'll talk to you just this once.
Exchange-traded funds are the investment world's new frontier.
You better listen.
But with so many choices and styles, the ETF world is a bit like the Wild Wild West, filled with new issues and ideas, but fraught with the same old dangers of investing.
If you're looking for trouble, I'll accommodate you.
Every Thursday, Tom Lydon of ETF Trends comes to Money Life to tell us about one ETF that is wearing the white hat right now.
Take it easy. We're the good guys.
He'll point out the good, the bad, and the ugly as he tells you which investment is worth taking a shot on.
That's good shooting.
And names his ETF of the week.
Now, Wild West.
Tom Lydon is back on the show, and he joins us every week at this time with the ETF of the week. Tom picks that ETF from among all the research he does, and at ETFtrends.com, his website, well, you can find everything you want to learn about ETFs, from soup to nuts, from Tom's picks to what's new in the industry, and much, much more. So check out the site. Don't forget to follow Tom on Twitter. He's at Tom Lydon. ETFtrends.com is at ETFtrends. Tom, welcome back to Money Life.
Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be back.
Our ETF of the week is
the VanEck High Yield Municipal Index ETF. Ticker symbol HYD.
HYD, the VanEck Vectors High Yield Muni Index ETF. This is now VanEck Vectors from Market Vectors. Same basic company. Why this fund now?
Well, most recently we had a lot of news coming out of Puerto Rico regarding their $422 million government default. I felt, like many others did, that that was going to send ripples throughout the municipal bond industry, and you know what? It just fell flat. Money continues to flow into municipal bonds for a variety of reasons. The tax equivalent yields on ETFs like this are huge compared to what you're getting on the taxable side. So, for example, the yield on this ETF is 3.69%. You know, you're talking about well over 5% from a tax equivalent yield standpoint, Chuck, and that's pretty attractive. Along the same lines, there have been continued muni upgrades within the marketplace. So, for example, only 9 municipal issuers defaulted in 2016, apart from Puerto Rico, compared to 24 over the same period of time last year. So, the yields are attractive. Defaults have gone down. Money continues to flow into municipals as opposed to treasuries that are actually much more affected by rising interest rates. And then on top of that, we've had a dovish Fed where at the beginning of this year, the Fed kind of guided that we would see as many as 4 rate hikes. Well, we're sitting here now not seeing any so far, and a lot of people feel like that may not be the case until the third quarter.
That said, munis have been a space that has a couple of people scared. It's also been a space that, truthfully, lots and lots of bond investors have some allocation to. So is this fund better constructed than some? Is it more that you want to go out the risk curve with part of your muni money because this is high yield? What is going to make you say this is an enhancement to your portfolio?
Well, what you trade off, like in most fixed income investments, is you trade off credit quality for yield. And everybody wants to find that perfect balance. If you go completely investment quality, you're going to get a yield that's going to be a lot lower than what you're seeing right here. What the folks at VanEck have done is provided a nice cross section. About a third is investment grade within the portfolio. There's another almost 50% that's speculative grade, you know, B or triple C. And again, even in that area, because we've seen so few defaults, there's a lot of research involved regarding the underlying securities here. So the chances of seeing a default are pretty small. 21% of the holdings within this portfolio are actually non-rated, and that's probably where you see you might have the chance to see the most defaults. But the whole idea here is companies like VanEck have a lot of research. They have the ability to know what's going on within these specific municipalities. And most importantly, they're diversified. They're diversified not only across different industry groups, but also regarding their state exposure as well. So, you know, with that in mind, every state has its own budget. But today, you're not really hearing that states, although they may be challenged financially, it's not as though they can't pay their bills. So while we've had a pretty good economy lately, municipal bonds have actually benefited from that, and you're still getting a much more attractive yield than you're getting with treasuries. So with that in mind, I know your next question is, so that's great, Tom, but what do I do with it, and how does that affect my allocation?
And 200-day moving average, don't forget.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. So first, 200-day moving average. This HYD is above its 200-day moving average. It's been above its 200-day moving average since last summer, and it's had a pretty good run-up, which is always a nice way to kind of protect your downside. So if, for example, you're concerned about credit quality, you're concerned about markets pulling back in the, on the municipal side, all you need to do is watch the 200-day average on HYD, and every month that you're in there and you get that yield, just count that as a bonus. At one point in time, if it goes below its 200-day average, you can move back to money market funds or treasuries if you'd like. So that's one thing. Number two, this is not just for your taxable investments. When you look at the comparative yield, there are a lot of people that are putting retirement funds that are trying to balance out between income and growth within municipals. Yes, you're not able to get the benefits of the tax-exempt portion of municipal investing. However, the yield is so attractive compared to treasuries right now, it makes sense. So don't hold back.
Well, there you have it. It's the ETF of the week, the VanEck Vectors High Yield Municipal Index ETF, HYD, formerly the Market Vectors High Yield Municipal Index ETF. It's the ETF of the week from Tom Lydon. Tom, thanks as always.
Thanks, Chuck.
Tom, of course, is the editor at ETFtrends.com. For more information, check out the website. It's ETFtrends.com on Twitter, at ETFtrends, where Tom is also, he's at Tom Lydon. What a great way to start the May 19th edition of Money Life. The big interview is next, and we'll get to it right after this message.
At Hightower, providing the best fiduciary advice to every advisory client is not just a job, it's a legal duty. Sophisticated asset management, lifetime financial planning, and wealth management solutions. At Hightower, it all adds up to peace of mind. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Many of you are surely wondering why I have summoned you at this hour.
It's time for the big interview!
All right, boys, prepare to be dazzled.
That's right, it's big. It's the big names, the big news, the biggest stories. It's the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
What's going on here? This is big news. We need coverage of this.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, the top experts, the brightest minds. With the big interview, you can stay informed about all the financial matters that are important to you, all in one big package.
Oh, boy. Got a package this big. I've always wanted to have a huge package.
Did my taxes pay for this?
The big interview. Sit down, strap yourself in, and get ready to learn.
Your mind is beginning to work. It's entirely due to my influence, of course. You mustn't take any credit.
Well, today we're going to hope that we can get your mind working around what's happening in the world of municipal bonds and bond investments generally, as we are talking to James Dearborn, who is head of municipal bond investments and senior portfolio manager at Columbia Threadneedle. If you are not familiar with the firm, go to ColumbiaThreadneedleUS.com. By the way, they have some great commentary there. And if you want to check out when they're putting up commentary and more, then follow the firm on Twitter. They are at CTInvest_US. James Dearborn, welcome to Money Life.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
We have been in this interest rate stasis for a long time. We have been expecting increases. We've got all those other sorts of things. And in the middle of all that, we've had a lot of turmoil in the muni bond market. Has the interest rate situation, where we haven't seen rates going up the way they were expected to, has that actually helped the muni market get through the troubles that we might have otherwise thought it would have, whether it's Detroit, Puerto Rico, and all the others?
Yes, I think that the general sort of stability of interest rates. Now, the Fed tried to or started to raise rates in December with a 25 basis point increase in the federal funds rate. But since then, there's been just general placidity in the muni bond market. And while January and early February were a pretty turbulent time for a lot of other markets, the muni bond market has been just plodding along, producing really stable quality, not stellar, but positive results month in and month out since then. So it's been a really good 2016 for the municipal bond world, and that's in spite of the stories about Puerto Rico and Chicago and Illinois and budget stalemates in Chicago and Illinois, but also in Pennsylvania, for instance. So we have some bad outliers in our market, but I think generally people are pretty confident that muni credit is okay at this point.
That being the case, as you look forward with the muni bond market, what happens as the rate picture starts to change? Because we are at this point, I think, generally coming to a consensus that we will see rates rise again before the end of the year. I don't think we're at a consensus as to how many times they're going to rise this year and into next year, but at least there's going to be some resumed movement going forward.
Yes, and I think that a reasonable number, at least one, potentially two more moves by the Fed before the end of the year is reasonable. And that isn't for people to think that just because the Fed raises rates that the entire bond market is going to fall apart or there's a lot of pressure. I do hear often people say that if the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates, that you need to be out of all fixed income. You know, I would go back and say that the municipal yield curve, the Treasury yield curve, move in different ways at different points. So just because the Federal Reserve is moving short rates higher, and that has a negative impact on short securities, doesn't necessarily mean that the long end of our yield curve, the rates are going to go up there, because if in fact they do go up on the longer end, that has a pronounced negative implication for longer fixed income securities, including municipal bonds. If you go back to 2004 to 2006, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 16 times, and yet at the end of that hiking cycle, the long end of our municipal yield curve was actually lower than it was at the beginning of it. So it is not necessarily always axiomatic, if you will, that we're going to have negative outcomes on the long end of our curve. Frankly, if inflation remains largely under control and the Fed continues to raise interest rates, it is possible that you could have this, what we call a flattening. And frankly, we've had a pretty pronounced flattening over the course of 2016, and it really has been going on for better part of a year now. We've seen this sort of interest rate flattening, and so that process could further continue if the Fed were to start raising rates before there was really strong signs of inflation.
Of course, the wild card in all of this is what happens with the political situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been talking munis, and I know that's your area of expertise and,
yes,
and specialty, but I would be remiss, since you are the first bond expert I have had on the show, since Donald Trump made comments that at least hinted that if he were to be elected, he might treat the federal debt the way he has sometimes treated the debt of his companies, and that default might be an option.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to get political here. It's not about politics. I'm just curious. With that kind of a statement, however outrageous, however he says, well, it's not what I meant, or however they're repositioning it, does that add volatility and danger, at the very least, political risk for the rest of the year and then beyond, depending on what happens in the election?
Well, in terms of his comments, I didn't hear them live, and I've only read, you know, secondhand representations of him. So I can't necessarily comment directly on that, but the Treasury has always been seen to be a sacrosanct obligation of the United States, and the Treasury bonds are considered risk-free investments, at least in terms of their repayment. So any questions about not repaying them is in fact troubling, more than just a little bit troubling, and potentially disconcerting for the markets. I think that the questions will be, and not just for Donald Trump or for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders even, is what other policies they're going to be implementing that will have material positive or negative implications for our markets. And frankly, right now, their policy positions are general at best and not really specific. And until we started to get some more feelings about the specific policies that each of these candidates would put forward, I think it's hard for the market to begin to handicap that in terms of which parts of our market will do better or worse in terms of equities and fixed income. But without question, I was pleased that it looked like he was backing away from any representation about the likelihood that he wouldn't be, as president, he would somehow back away from making payments on Treasury obligations. As I said, I think those are sacrosanct, and I think our market relies on that.
Yeah, I think there's so much danger in there that I'm hopeful that, you know, I just misquoted, misunderstood the question, something that gets us away from that. Now, that said, if the market can't ascertain what's happening next, as you just kind of suggested, does that mean that as we get towards the election, we're just going to see a lot more volatility? Or when we talk about bonds, interest rates are all that matter, and we won't see additional volatility thrown in as a result of the political situation?
No, I don't think you should ever discount politics. And it's, you know, it's unclear exactly how, and it's very, but the hardest thing about politics is it's very hard to predict, and that the ability to anticipate the nuances of what individuals will do and campaigns will do as we go further into the process, especially given that there is an element of populism that has found its way into this race, especially in the Sanders and also I think in the Trump campaigns, that you need to be focused on in terms of whether that is how that plays out in terms of policy and regulations toward businesses, and whether they're positive or negative. You know, it's not good for me to speculate on presidential elections. I can, in fact, say from the municipal bond world that politics do matter. That we see in Illinois the negative implications of when there is a stalemate in terms of politics, that the governor and the legislature are at loggerheads over what the right things to do are vis-a-vis tax policy and pensions, and that that state has really suffered in terms of downgrades and market representation or market perceptions about credit quality because they can't arrive at some sort of compromise to move the ball forward. And so as for the presidential election, I can't really comment on that, but I can tell you that politics do matter, and we see it every day in the muni market.
As you look at the muni bond market right now, we got through the Detroit situation sort of better than I think anybody expected.
Yes.
Do you worry about the other places that are making muni bond headlines right now that we can't get through, that one of them has to be a blow up, or can we get through with each of those situations resolved without somehow imploding and really damaging the folks who held the paper?
Yeah, and I think we're going to see this, and it's going to be really important in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has reached the point where their economy just will not support the amount of debt that they have outstanding, along with their other government service programs, and that there have to be real sincere cuts made in everything, including debt service. And so the question will be, how does our market react? Because Puerto Rico is a pretty systemic security. Now, recently, and over the past couple of years, Puerto Rico securities have really transferred from retail municipal bondholders' hands more into hedge fund hands. But there still is plenty of Puerto Rico debt, both in individual holders' hands as well as in mutual funds. Happily, we have a very small exposure at this point, so the implication for our funds would be limited. However, I would say that if Puerto Rico stops making debt service payments and that individual investors begin to worry and try and sell that debt, or mutual funds that own that debt, you know, were forced to try and sell it, that we could see some implications for our market. You know, at this point, every time there seems to be a big problem with Puerto Rico, it doesn't have a negative effect on our market. So I'm pretty confident that it won't be there. But until we get to that point where we actually default, I'd like to reserve judgment on it.
Well, James, this has been great. I hope we get a chance to chat with you again sometime.
It'd be my pleasure. Thank you very much.
James Dearborn is head of municipal bond investments and senior portfolio manager at Columbia Threadneedle. ColumbiaThreadneedleUS.com, at CTInvest_US on Twitter. We will be back with the second half of Money Life, so stay tuned.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
When it comes to investing and managing money, there is no one right way.
Of course, people do go both ways.
Ultimately, you and your advisors will make shared decisions to determine the path you take.
It appears we share the same passions.
Welcome to Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions, where Hightower advisors look at key situations facing you and help you see how discussion and analysis can lead to ideal decisions. Yes, it's time to get smart and put our heads together. And make the best decision for your situation.
Yes, it's time to put our heads together with the gang from Hightower Advisors. It's Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. And it's the only segment on Money Life each week where we have more than one guest. But what's doubly interesting about it is that normally if you had two guys and they were working for the same firm, they would be looking at the same data, they'd come to the same opinions, and most likely, they'd be drinking from the same water cooler, one that was spiked by the company to say, hey, this is what you believe, this is what you think, and go tell the world about it. But that's not how it works at Hightower Advisors, because Hightower doesn't say, do it our way. Hightower says, let's take the best of the advisors we work with, let's bring them in, let them continue to do what they have done well, but also make additional resources available so that they can adjust things accordingly, deal with more people, get outside of their comfort zones, and then find out what they want to be able to do that's going to make them and their clients comfortable regardless of market conditions. If you want to learn more about the Hightower difference, go to HightowerAdvisors.com. They're on Twitter at Hightower, A-D-V-S-O-R. Now today, we're going to be continuing a discussion that we started last week with Matthias Kuhlme, head of Global Investment Solutions at Hightower, and Matt Harris, head of Analytics and Research. Matthias, by the way, is on Twitter. He's at MoneyClipBlog, where you can get more on his feelings on the issues he talks about here and elsewhere. And Matt is on Twitter. He's at MattHarrisCMT. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program. Now, Matthias, last week we were talking about official data and how it shapes inflation. And you were quoting one economist who was saying inflation is off. The official numbers are off by 9 percentage points. And Matt was citing an index different from your source, but that was confirming your source and basically saying, yeah, the real, more true measure of inflation is 9% higher than you would believe if you drink the official version of this. So how should investors be positioning themselves given the prospect of future inflation? Because the official numbers are low, but people expect them to go up. The unofficial numbers are way up, and people are expecting them to go higher. So where do people go in that kind of environment?
Well, Chuck, you know, it continues to be a fascinating topic for me. And as we debated last week, this has been something we have followed for years now. Let me start with an interesting number. And this shows you listeners and us that there's something flawed in the system with so much money that has been created that kind of needs to show up somewhere, right? But it doesn't show up in the official data. Let me take you back 2 years when we recorded a segment here. And at that time, the St. Louis Fed, we are talking now the official data by the Fed, had analyzed the increase of money supply between the years 2008 and 14. These were the critical years when the system needed money. The money supply increase was a staggering 40%. And the impact should have been, based on this data, to show an annual inflation of nearly 4.5%. And that was not the case. So what really happens is the money that was made available went into other pockets of opportunity. And this opens now the door to the investment topic. Inflation, in my view, will show up somewhere. And we have seen it in financial market appreciation, especially equities, select commodities, real estate assets, art, collectibles, all of these have pretty much gone through the roof. I'd mentioned it also in a previous segment. I don't think it's a coincidence that Americans polled last year, as before, we were down this road before, considered real estate as their most important long-term assets. So there is already a common acknowledgement that something is happening, that inflation is somewhere, but it's showing up likely in asset markets, and that kind of gives us the opportunity to invest alongside this topic.
Matt, is that where you'd be going? Or is there some way else that you would be suggesting that people deal with inflation where, again, there's disagreement on the numbers because the official numbers are so low and what appears to you to be real numbers is so high?
Yeah, Chuck, I'm going to take a look in the traditional space of real assets as that inflation hedge. But today I want to talk about a little bit different approach and not a specific asset class or style of investing, but more portfolio construction. When people often think of real assets as an asset class, they jump to their mind of one or two assets, usually real estate or even just gold itself. What I think we need to stress today is we need investors to take a multi-asset class approach. Most real asset investors are taking equity positions. But if you have the ability to invest in debt securities or debt-related securities to real assets, you get a different return profile. You get a different risk profile as well. Also, I think it's important for investors to diversify across the entire real asset spectrum, to invest in real estate, commodities, infrastructure. There's a lot of different types of real assets. And they all are in different cycles at different times. So you get the diversification approach, therefore reducing your risk but enhancing your return. Last, I think it's important for investors to diversify across the varying spectrum of illiquidity. This day and age, there's the ability to invest in real assets in many daily liquid products of some sort. And I think this is appropriate for a lot of different investors and different asset classes. But when and where appropriate, investors can capture a premium when using illiquid investments, whether it's private equity-like structures, hedge funds, and so forth, to really capture that attractive upside potential. So the long story is, I think real assets are a great way to hedge against inflation, but it needs to be in a diversified, well-built portfolio.
I want to throw this back to Matthias for a moment. Matthias, what I've just heard from both of you, a very well-stated case for why an investor would want to diversify further and potentially into some asset classes that might otherwise make them uncomfortable. I am curious, when you tell somebody, hey, I know you're looking at the numbers going, inflation's not that bad. I haven't had to worry about it. But here's what we think the numbers are. Did they ever look at you like you're crazy? Or did they say, this all makes sense, and they aggressively want to pursue this more diversified, more real assets kind of approach?
Chuck, I think there are both aspects to consider. In the early years, we were considered a little more crazy than others. Today, I think it is very common to find more buy-in into the idea that life actually has become rather expensive without official data, inflation data that is ticking up. The gap or the bridge between those findings and how to protect purchasing power, that's a little more difficult, and investing is not necessarily what comes to mind, right? You could just, you know, make adjustments to your household budget, the way you live your life, what you consume, and so on. But there is a case that over the years to come, the money will continue to be and stay in the system and will create asset price inflation of some sort. So I think a good talking point, this is how I speak to the clients here at Hightower and how we advise, you know, look at what has worked, but be careful because what has worked may already be too rich. More importantly, identify the future stores of value, have a long-term plan, especially considering the lack of attractive options for nearly all asset classes. The markets are priced richly. So let me give you an example of future store values in the current environment. I think a thematic angle is always helpful. Look at certain commodities such as water. Look at regions that really grow not only subpar as most of the developed world, such as some frontier and emerging markets, and look to capture value that is least subjected to the risk of political intervention. Now I'm making a reference to all of the fiat currencies. So my answer, Chuck, is, no, we're not the only crazy people anymore. Life has become expensive. The consumer is aware. They actually have become far more moderate in their spending. We see it. On the other side, building the bridge between that sort of sentiment and finding into investing is a little harder. But that's why we're here, to give education and help and identify these future stores of value.
Well, exactly. And I think that folks really can benefit from a perspective that says, here is this lurking, looming monster that while you've been waiting for the official knock on the front door, it's been sneaking in the back door and you want to be participating in it. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me on Money Life. This has been Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. And if you want to learn more about the Hightower difference, go to HightowerAdvisors.com. On Twitter at HightowerAdvSOR. My guests have been Matthias Kuhlmeich, Managing Director at Hightower, Head of Global Investment Solutions, on Twitter at MoneyClipBlog, and Matt Harris, Head of Analytics and Research at Hightower, on Twitter at MattHarrisCMT. The Money Life Market Call is next. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Independent and advisor-owned, Hightower ensures that best-in-class financial product and service providers compete for your business every day, a groundbreaking model that's making waves on Wall Street. Discover what Hightower can do for you at HightowerAdvisors.com.
It's hard to know what to do next in the stock market.
Where am I? What am I doing here?
That's because one expert's rally is another's prelude to a correction.
Of course, people do go both ways.
One manager's buy is another man's sell.
Have you come to any conclusions yet?
Each day, the Money Life Market Call brings you a different expert's take on where to invest and what to avoid.
Now listen, Grapehead, I'll explain it so even you can understand it.
Just as important, you'll find out the reasons behind that thinking, and that should make your next financial decisions easier and smarter.
We do have a system, and it works.
It's the Money Life Market Call. Now.
The only reason we're here is to make catty observations and rude remarks. And there was nothing good on TV.
Well, you know there's nothing good on TV. That's just a constant. But we're not looking for catty observations and rude remarks. We're looking for savvy observations and shrewd remarks. We hope to get those today from David Swank. He is the co-manager of the Hood River Small Cap Growth Fund. Now, one of his partners was on the show in the past. It's David's first appearance here. The fund's ticker symbol, HRSRX, Hood River Small Cap Growth. That's why you get the HRS in there. And the website for more information on the firm or the funds is hoodrivercapital.com. David Swank, welcome to Money Life.
Thanks for having me, Chuck.
Now, I did mention that Brian Smolik, one of your partners, has been on the show in the past, but I'm never going to assume that everybody understands methodologies or remembers that kind of stuff. So we have to start there, because until we know what makes you tick and why you're buying something, there's no value to hearing buy, sell, or hold recommendations.
Sure. So at Hood River, we focus on buying quality small cap growth companies at reasonable valuations that we believe will earn more than other investors expect. So the first step in the process is finding the best businesses. Typically, we're looking for businesses growing at more than 15% with below a $3 billion market cap, with strong cash flow and superior products and increasing market share. The key next step, though, is to go out and talk to people. We talk to management teams. We talk to customers of companies, to suppliers, to competitors, to other industry experts, to try to really understand what's happening on the ground with that company, and to really get some novel empirical insight into what's happening that may not be shared by other investors. So once we've gone out and done that value-added research, we figure out if we if our view on the fundamentals going forward is different from the street's view. What we want is what we call an information gap, where we expect that a company is going to do better than other investors expect. When we have that, we want to make sure that we pay the right price. And what that leaves us with is a portfolio of quality companies that are small cap growth companies trading at reasonable valuations that should have upside to their revenue and earnings over, let's say, the next 6 to 24 months.
It's a very interesting approach, but it also sounds that at times you're trying to identify stuff where you can recognize the catalyst that's going to spur the growth, but the catalyst hasn't been triggered yet. How long are you willing to wait? And how often do you have to sort of say, okay, I can see the catalyst, but it's not the right time. The company's just not there yet.
Sure. That's a great question, Chuck. So in terms of our valuation horizon, we care what a company is worth if you hold it forever. But in reality, that usually gets built in fairly quickly. So what we're looking for are situations where companies are going to do better than expected over the next, 3, 6, 24 months. It's kind of hard to see much further into the future than that, better than other folks. So most of the time, we're expecting good results in the next quarter or two. And we definitely don't want to sit through bad quarters. If we think that a company is going to miss, then it's a good bet that we're not going to own the stock. But really, we're looking for stories that have more legs than just a quarter or two. We want companies that are going to outperform fundamentally over the course of 2 or 3 or more years. But we want the company to be hitting our expectations every quarter along that path, because if you're shooting for the moon and you're off by just a little bit, that can lead to a pretty big miss by the time you get there.
Right. From the perspective of the big picture, because everything you've talked about is basically, let's examine the company, let's get our boots on the ground, let's do that research, we're going to stay out of the ivory tower and go do it sort of individually. How much does the big picture play in? And I mean, small caps, not the area that has had the best performance for an investor, but a good diversifier, and an area that, well, you kind of get mixed results. I've talked to a couple of folks who think it's the next sweet spot, and I've talked to a couple of folks who don't think that's coming yet.
I think that your first question is around how much do we do on the macro side versus the bottom up side? Mm-hmm. And really, we're very bottom up focused. We feel pretty good about our ability to add value on specific stocks that typically may not be particularly well analyzed. If you think about a big company like Apple, that I believe that Apple has 50-some brokerage firm analysts covering it, and of course a ton of buy-side analysts. It's kind of hard to get an edge on Apple. But if you look at some of the companies in our portfolio, a lot of them may have, you know, 5 or 10 or maybe not even any brokerage firm analysts covering it, and they tend to be not delving as deeply into these companies. So it's actually relatively easy to get an edge on smaller cap companies versus bigger cap companies. And certainly when you get to the macro level of the economy, everybody's looking at the economy, and it's just difficult to have confidence that a person has a better model than the next person when it comes to the economy. So typically our macro views are informed by what we're hearing from all of the contacts that we have on a bottom-up basis.
So now let's put it into action. What's a name or two that comes through the process that stands out to you? And because for you, you are literally looking for something specific that makes them stand out to you. What is it that triggers that reaction?
One company that we like right now is a company called NuVasive. NuVasive sells products for the surgical treatment of spine disorders. So its key product is the XLIF system, that stands for Extreme Lateral Interbody Fusion, that allows spinal surgeons to use minimally invasive surgery to remove diseased discs and place new implants. This procedure is faster than traditional lumbar fusion surgery, and it has less blood loss and lower complication rates and shorter hospital stays. So the doctors that we've talked to about this and NuVasive's other products generally like it and expect to use more of it going forward. So our channel checks are suggesting that the street's estimates for revenue growth are too low. I think that they can grow low double digits going forward, and they should be able to grow EPS at 20% plus for the foreseeable future as their operating margin grows from 15 to 25%. And then kind of as icing on the cake, the tax rate should fall from about a little over 40% this year down to the low 30s as their international business becomes profitable. So this is a story that I think has some pretty good legs over the next 5 years.
And NuVasive's ticker symbol?
It's N as in Nancy, UVA.
What's something else that stands out to you?
Sure. Another one that we like is Charles River Labs. The ticker is CRL, Charlie, Rachel, Larry. They do outsourced safety and toxicology work for biopharma companies. They provide research models, also known as genetically engineered mice and rats. Basically, they test the safety of drugs in animals, which is an essential part of the drug development process and without which we wouldn't have drugs. I think that the company is seeing strong demand as preclinical pipelines fill up at pharma and biotech companies. And as capacity in their business is filling up, prices have begun to rise. So I think it should grow revenues at a high single-digit rate and see growing margins. And it should trade at about 17 times my 2017 EPS estimate of $5.50 or $94 to $80 today.
Okay. Understandable on both those cases why you would see them and what you see there. Quickly, what's something that you've had to move away from?
One thing that we have sold recently is True Blue. These guys do temporary staffing, and it tends to be lower. And what we've heard from a number of companies is that the labor market continues to firm up, and True Blue was, in our opinion, a way to play that. We've recently sold it, though, because primarily of some company-specific things that they ran into. Their biggest customer is Amazon, and basically Amazon moved a contract from them. So,
and that makes it understandable if you're looking at that. And again, you're looking at that, what are you hearing from boots on the ground and the rest of those things? That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so in that instance, we think that we had the macro picture right based on a bottom-up empirical work, but you know, we didn't pick up the key thing.
And so that's True Blue, which is ticker symbol TBI. Now we're going to find out how you feel about some stocks that my audience is particularly interested in.
Wait, hold it.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's hold it or fold it time with my guest, David Swank. He is co-manager of the Hood River Small Cap Growth Fund, ticker symbol HRSRX. For more information, go to hoodrivercapital.com. Now, hold it or fold it, you know how to play, but if you want to get involved directly, send your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in to Chuck at MoneyLifeShow.com. We're going to start with a request we got from Kirk in Huntsville, Alabama. It's for Ceres Corporation. That's ticker symbol C-E-R-S.
All right. Ceres Corporation is a company that I like here, so I'm going to say buy it. And in fact, Hood River has bought it. We currently own it. Ceres is the only company with an approved device for pathogen removal from the blood supply, and it's a good play on the Zika virus. Although Zika is not necessarily a game changer, it should help to accelerate demand throughout the year. The FDA is encouraging blood centers and hospitals to use Intercept instead of testing. So revenue guidance of $30 to $40 million in 2016 should prove conservative.
That's a buy on Ceres or Ceres, ticker symbol
yes.
C-E-R-S.
Would you mind stepping aside? I've got a purchase to make.
Next, for Mark in Mitchell, South Dakota, it's Corporate Office Properties Trust, OFC.
All right, this is one that we have owned in the past. Corporate Office Properties is a REIT, a real estate investment trust focusing on suburban office properties, and they are heavily involved with the federal government. They have a new CEO who seems solid. But my concern is that they've guided to full-year occupancy of 93 to 95%, and I think that there could be some risk to that. So at 13.5 times forward FFO, it's trading about in line with the group, so I'd sell it.
Okay. So not a hold on that, a sell, an actual time to be done with it.
Yes.
Okay.
Don't get greedy.
That's a sell on Corporate Office Properties Trust, OFC. Dale in London, Ohio, wants to know about Badger Meter Incorporated, BMI.
Badger makes flow measurement and control products, mainly for water utility instrumentation and connectivity. It's a good company. It has a good product line that stacks up well versus competitors, and business seems to be going well. And furthermore, I think it has shareholder-oriented management that's likely to sell out at some point. But at 14 times next year's EBITDA estimate for a company that's grown top line around 6%, I think all of that's in the stock. I don't think that the possibility of a sale is a secret. So if something goes wrong, there's downside risk there. I'd sell it.
So that's a sell on Badger Meter, ticker symbol BMI.
Let's sell now.
Next, for Dave in Beaver Dams, New York, it's Roche Holdings, ticker symbol RHHBY.
All right, so when I think of a quality company doing innovative work, Roche is one of the first that I think of. They've got a strong pipeline. They have limited biosimilar risk. None of that's a secret, but with a valuation of about 16 times, it's 2016 EPS. You're getting a really high-quality company with good long-term growth for a decent valuation, so I'd hold it.
Okay, so we're holding it, not buying more at this point, on Roche Holdings, ticker symbol RHHBY.
No money changes hands today.
And last, for David in Grass Valley, California, back from Afghanistan, it's NovoCure Limited, ticker symbol NVCR.
Oh boy. NovoCure sells the Optune system for treating glioblastoma multiforme. It's a form of brain cancer, and it uses electrical fields to do that. So the system consists of electrodes that patients wear on their shaved head, combined with a battery pack that the patient carries in a backpack. Taken at face value, the clinical data seems good, and it is in fact interesting, but my issue with it is that the trials have not been blinded, which calls into question the quality of the data. Secondly, the patients don't like the cosmetics of electrodes on a shaved head. It kind of gets the rap of a tinfoil hat.
Yeah.
And then third, it's an unconventional mechanism of action that makes it a tougher sell for docs who are used to using drugs or surgery, but not tinfoil hats. So at some point, there may be better quality data here, and it could get increased traction down the road, but for now, I'd fold it.
Yeah, right now, well, when you start to hear about electrodes on the head, you're not surprised that the recommendation is...
Put that one on the psycho list.
You bet. That was a sell on NovoCure Limited, NVCR. We've come to the end of our time with David Swank, but David, this was terrific. I hope you'll come back and do this with us again sometime.
Thank you, Chuck. I'd like that.
David Swank is co-portfolio manager for the Hood River Small Cap Growth Fund, the ticker symbol HRSRX. For more information on the firm or the fund, go to hoodrivercapital.com. Hey, there's just a couple minutes to go, so don't leave now. We'll wrap things up, fill you in on what else is happening, and set you up for the rest of the week when we wrap up today's show right after this message.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors, Incorporated.
Back on Money Life. Thanks for sticking with me. You know, when you get a guy like David Swank on the show, he picked five stocks that I don't know that we've ever talked about any of them ever before on the show. And by the way, it occurred to me today that we didn't celebrate the anniversary of the show. Then we got to May and I was like, May is here. Wow, it's hard to believe that we're already into May. Our show actually, we sort of say it started the 1st of May because, well, it started actually on April the 30th. Yeah, it started, we had one day in April. And that was 4 years ago. Wow. You know, if for anybody who was thinking about it, when we were talking about my daughter going to her graduation, when we started the show, she was finishing high school. So we were months away from her leaving to go. She graduated from high school at the end of May or beginning of June in 2012. And we started the show April the 30th. I think that was the Monday. And by the way, on that first day, now, this is not to say that the show was downloaded only by the two people, but on the first day, we had two downloads. That was it. So in podcast land, et cetera, two people knew enough about us, and we sent emails out and everything else. Now, a bunch of people wound up listening to that show and catching up with us, and by the end of the first week, we were rolling and starting to pick up some steam. But I find it pretty funny. And so, yeah, we got through without doing it. But I'm not sure we've ever talked about the stocks that I heard from today from David Swank. So I thought that was actually kind of interesting. And it's always fun when that happens. Beyond that, well, we've got great guests planned for you for the next couple of days and actually hopefully beyond that as well. Tomorrow on this show, Brian Hennessy from the Alpine Dynamic Dividend, Jim Welsh from Macro Trends. He's the guy that used to be with Forward Funds, writes a very interesting macro trend newsletter, makes it pretty easy for you to get, by the way, too. So have a pen handy when you're listening to tomorrow's show. Of course, Greg McBride will be here and we'll have more as well. Then you go into next week, Maury Fertig from Relative Value Partners, Eric Marshall from Hodges Small Cap. They are both scheduled to be here next week, as well as Dick Burridge from RMB Investments, Sandy Sanders from Manulife, John Hancock will be here. We've got Tony Turner from Trendstar coming next week, and Kevin Mann, who is with Hennian and Welsh, he'll be here as well. We've got Mark Yusko coming on June the 1st from Morgan Creek Asset Management. We're going to have great guests all the time because that's what we try to do. So plan to be with us. Thanks so much to my guests for being here. Of course, Rob Floyd is my producer. I couldn't do it without him, but it was great to talk today with Tom Lydon, with James Dearborn, with David Swank, and with the Hightower Gang, Matthias and Matt. I want to thank you for being here. You're the one who really makes this great for me. So thanks so much for coming. All right. It's time for the Money Life quote of the day. And today's quote, well, it's one of those from Anonymous, the famous Anonymous.
Anonymous, He wishes to remain anonymous. Anonymous,
yeah.
You said?
That's what he said, an anonymous gentleman.
Well, this anonymous gentleman said, a nearby penny is worth a distant dollar. It's true, and we hope you remember, hey, a nearby penny, until we do this again the next time, is, you know, don't worry too much about your money. I don't even know what I was trying to say. See you, everybody.
Policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
Dude, will you just end this thing now?